Welcome to today's webinar, GIMME 5150, Introduction to the Women-Owned Small Business Federal Contract Program. This is presented by Ann Sullivan, who will help you navigate the process of registering for the program and to help you grow your business. The GIMME 5 program is named after the 5% federal contracting goal set by Congress in 2000. It's a national program for women impacting public policy and American Express Open, designed to provide business education tools for women business owners to help them apply for and secure federal procurement opportunities. My name is Scott Nolan, GIMME 5 program coordinator for women impacting public policy. Before we present today's course, I do have a few brief technical notes. We are recording this presentation, including the question and answer segment. A podcast recording will be sent along with a brief survey to all registered attendees of today's call. We like to keep these sessions interactive, and we invite your questions as the session is delivered, but we have muted the lines for audio quality. During the presentation, if you have any questions for our instructor, please feel free to send your questions immediately via the chat function, and that's on the right side of the webinar, or ask your question during the question and answer segment at the end of the training. Please do not put your phone on hold as it can disrupt the call. If you need to step away, please hang up and call back when you're ready to rejoin the session. For optimal viewing, you can click on the full screen icon on the upper right of the display window. Today's course instructor is Ann Sullivan. Ann Sullivan is president of WIP Government Relations and president of Madison Services Incorporated, a women-owned company which provides government relations services to corporate and nonprofit clients. She brings many years of government relations experience in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives, serving in key advisory roles. Ms. Sullivan works for the United States Congress as well as the United States government agencies to bring her clients' issues national attention. Her expertise includes government procurement, healthcare and tax issues affecting small business. MSGI specializes in outreach to the small business community with an emphasis on women-owned and minority businesses. She also serves on the James Madison University College of Integrated Science and Technology Executive Advisory Council. On March 10th, Ms. Sullivan received the Enterprising Woman of the Year Award. And Anne, the floor is yours. My slides are just starting to upload, so if you just want to let me know whenever you want me to advance one, we can go right ahead. Take it away, Anne.
Thanks so much. Thanks a lot, Scott, for that introduction. And I just want to say at the beginning of this webinar that it is a privilege to represent WIP and to represent all the women business owners throughout the country that are really a powerful force in Washington. And so I just wanted to say thank you to everybody on the call for being a part of this organization. If you're not, we'd love for you to join and be part of the voice. I'm going to talk about the Women's Procurement Program today because it's something that WIP and I worked on for 11 years to try to implement it. So now, since it's finally implemented, we need to make sure that it's a successful program. So I appreciate, I think we have like 130 people on the call, and I want to thank everybody for that. So, in order to understand this program, you really need to know the history to put it into context. As with every federal program and especially procurement programs, it really helps to have a historical perspective to understand how it's going to work. In the year 2000, public law, Scott, first slide. In the year 2000, Public Law 106-554 established a women's procurement program to assist the government in meeting its 5% woman-owned contracting goal. In 2007, the first proposed women's procurement program was finally put into place, or the wheels at least started to move on it from SBA's perspective, but it was highly unsatisfactory to the women business owners in the country. It only included four industry categories that would have qualified for the program. And if I remember, it was engraving, cabinetry, I mean, just esoteric industries rather than the industries that that most women businesses are a part of. And it had a very onerous requirement that required agencies to find past discrimination toward women-owned businesses. And for any of you on the call who think that a federal agency is willingly going to find itself having discriminated toward women-owned businesses, try again. That really was a way to actually kill the program. WIP worked very, very hard for 3 years to get rid of that program and to put in a much better program, which the SBA did in March 2010. We worked very hard. Our hard work paid off. Thousands of women across the nation worked on this with us, and instead of four categories, we ended up with 83 industry categories that are now included in the program. And then finally in October 10, and by the way, that onerous provision that said agencies had to find themselves discriminatory, that was also dropped. So now we have a much better program in place. In October 2010, the SBA released the final program, and the implementation began on February 4th, 2011. It's how the WOSB program works. So let's talk about how it works. This program allows contracting officers to restrict competition to women-owned small businesses if the anticipated award price does not exceed $6.5 million in the case of manufacturing contracts, and $4 million in the case of all other contracts. So these are the awards, the contract awards can't be above that number. They have to be below 6.5 for manufacturing, $4 million for everybody else that's included in those 83 categories. The contracting officer has to believe that the contract will be awarded at a fair and reasonable price. The third condition is that the contracting officer has a reasonable expectation that two or more women-owned small businesses will submit offers on a contract. And the fourth category is that the women-owned small business fits into one of the 83 qualifying industry groups, which actually represents over 300 industry categories. And what that means is, I don't know how many of you on the call know what a NAICS code is, N-A-I-C-S code, but those are the categories that are assigned to industries who are trying to do federal work. NAICS codes can be found, the list can be found on either the Commerce site, commerce.gov or sba.gov, where you can find a whole list of industry categories. So 83 is a four-digit NAICS code. If you go further and you take that out to a six-digit NAICS code, which means it narrows the category even further, we really have 300 industry NAICS codes that are participating in this program. So this is not a small program. This program includes a lot of people. Next slide is there are two categories of industry under the program. There are 38 industries of those 83 that I talked about that are called substantially underrepresented. If the industry is substantially underrepresented, that means that all women-owned businesses that are small can participate in the program. There are 45 of those industry categories of the 83 that are determined to be underrepresented. And what that means is there needs to be an additional finding of economically disadvantaged for the business that wants to participate in the program. So let me just repeat, since we don't have any slides. 38 of the 83 categories are substantially underrepresented, meaning Any woman-owned business that is small can participate. 45 of the 83, however, require an additional finding from that business that determines that it is economically disadvantaged. And I'll go into how you determine that. Let's talk about program eligibility. First of all, it's only open to small businesses, so you have to be a small business. SBA size standards apply. If you don't know what your size standard is for your industry, you can go to sba.gov/size standards, and it will tell you, it will either give you a revenue number or an employee number that you're considered small. So, for example, just choosing something kind of out of thin air, I think architecture, I think their revenue standard is 6.8 million. So if you have revenues above 6.8 million, you would not be considered a small business under SBA for purposes of federal contracting. If you have an employee standard, and I think telecommunications is probably a good example, that size standard has an employee standard which is 1,500 or below. If you had above 1,500 employees and you were in the telecommunications industry, then you would no longer be considered a small business for purposes of contracting with the federal government. You have to be a woman-owned and controlled firm, which for this program means that you have to be 51% or more owned by one or more women. The ownership has to be direct. Women must manage the day-to-day operations. Women have to make long-term decisions. Those are the criteria. It can be more than one woman, but it can't be controlled by equally by a man or woman. If a man and a woman both own a company 50-50, that could not be a part of this program. So the woman has to own 51%. It's okay if it's more than one woman, but if it's equally owned by a man and a woman, then it does not qualify for this program. And then, of course, you have to certify as a woman-owned small business or an economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business. So let's just go into program eligibility. To qualify as an economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business, for those categories I talked about before, and I think that is 45 industries, you need to meet the following criteria. Your personal net worth has to be less than $750,000, and that excludes business ownership, your primary residence, and retirement. So I guess I kind of, in my brain, think about this as you have, you know, $750,000, that is kind of sitting around in an account, because it excludes business ownership, primary residence, and retirement. The next criteria to be economically disadvantaged is your 3-year average adjusted gross yearly income cannot exceed $350,000. So if for the last 3 years your average adjusted gross yearly income exceeded $350,000, your business would not qualify as an economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business. The third criteria is that the fair market value of all of the owner's assets, and this is the woman who owns 51%, can't exceed $6 million. And that excludes retirement. So how do you register or certify that you are woman-owned, and if you are in those disadvantaged categories, economically disadvantaged, how does that work? The SBA allows women to certify two ways. One is either self-certify or certify through third parties approved by SBA. The SBA, it's important to note, the SBA will accept your 8A if you are a woman-owned small business. So if you've got an 8A certification already, they'll accept that for this program. There are currently no third parties certified yet, so the only way to certify right now for this program is really through self-certification. I think later on this year, the SBA fully intends to certify third-party certifiers, which are people like we, or organizations like WeBank, NABOC, just to mention a few. And those organizations have applied to SBA to become third-party certifiers. But as I said, there are no third-party certifiers in place right now in terms of being approved for the program. So the only way to become active right now is to self-certify. The question is, how do you self-certify? And here are the steps. First of all, let me give you this website. www.sba.gov/WOSB. Third-party certifiers will also be listed when they're approved on this website. Let me repeat, it's sba.gov/WOSB. There are five ways that SBA, there's five steps that SBA has identified for you to participate in the program. First, you need to read. As with all federal contracting, read first, act later. So you need to read the federal contract program regulations in the Federal Register and the Women-Owned Small Business Compliance Guide, which on my slides have a link, and you'll have access to them. So that's the first thing you have to know. You have to know the rules. Second of all, you have to register in the Central Contractor Registry, which is the CCR, as a woman-owned small business or as an economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business. Step number three, you have to register and log on to SBA's general login system. And again, we have a link for that. Number four, you have to go to the WOSB program repository, which is through that general login system, and you need to upload all required documents. Step number five, you need to represent your status, which is woman-owned or economically disadvantaged woman-owned, in something that we know as ORCA. Online Representations and Certifications Application. Again, we have those links. And let me just go back to where you can find all this and go through the five steps, www.sba.gov/WOSB.
And I will interject, Anne, the slides are working, and I'm on slide 10 right now.
Well, I lost you a long time ago, so
okay.
I can just briefly stop and maybe log in.
And once again, I will remind everyone that if you missed a slide, I will be sending them to everyone later today or tomorrow, so you'll have access to all of the slides later.
I'm at the WOSB program repository slide.
Perfect. That's where we are.
Okay. So thanks for following along, even though I couldn't see that you were. So we talked a little bit about that you have to have all your documents in the program repository. This is a special website that was designed by SBA for this program. So here are some of the things that you need to know. The document repository is maintained by SBA. It houses the WOSB and the EDWOSB, which is economically disadvantaged, supporting documentation and third-party certifications. It's a secure web-based environment. It's accessible to women-owned small businesses, economically women-owned small businesses, the SBA, and the contracting officer community. And it allows the contracting officer to access documents prior to the contract award, which is important because no contracting officer can set aside anything for women-owned businesses unless they have access to documents, because they have to show that at least two women-owned businesses can qualify, if you remember my earlier slide at the beginning. Here are the things you need when you register through the repository. Next slide. You need proof of U.S. citizenship. You need your articles of incorporation, your articles of organization and amendments. You need your operating agreement, bylaws, stock certificates, stock ledger, and voting agreements. You need your partnership agreement and amendments. You need the WOSB program certification. And if you're an economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business in those 43 categories, you need to fill out BA Form 413, which is your personal financial statement. And that's because, remember the three criteria I told you with respect to net worth? That's how you prove that. So how does a contracting officer, next slide, determine eligibility for a woman-owned small business or an economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business contract? Scott, the next slide. The CO, or contracting officer, will check in three different places. They're going to check the CCR to ensure you've checked the box for WOSB or EDWOSB. You have to check the box in CCR. Then they're going to check on ORCA, which, you know, has a long description. I don't even remember what all of it stands for, online something or other, but we know it as ORCA. They're going to check in the ORCA database to ensure that there's a representation that the business, in fact, is WOSB and EDWOSB. And then the third place they're going to look is they're going to make sure that all the documents that we just went through in the repository are in the repository, so that it shows that you are eligible to participate in the program. So they're going to check all three. Somebody told me that when they went through the process of registering and doing this self-certification, there's apparently a box, and I can't exactly tell you where, but somewhere in the process, there's a box that you need to check that says, yes, I am giving my permission to allow contracting officers to look at this information. And I strongly urge you to do that, because it will save you so much time if you check that box. Otherwise, it requires back and forth from the contracting officer to ask for permission to access, and they then have to get the access. It's a back and forth. It will just delay things. So make sure you look out for that box to check to give contracting officers a blanket access to your information in the repository. The next slide is, how do I learn more? I know I've zipped through this pretty quickly, but as I said, there are places that you can go back and review. There are websites that are actually really very good that will be very helpful. The first one I mentioned before, which is devoted to updates, resources, it's really very good, is www.sba.gov www.wosb.org/WOSB. The second really helpful resource is something that WIP created, a program called Give Me Five. It's in partnership with American Express Open, and it provides a lot of instruction classes on webinars on contracting, both basic and more advanced. You need to go to giveme5.com. If you're not a member of WIP, we certainly urge you to become one and take advantage of all the programming. And then the third place that WIP specifically walks you through the certification is a webinar that Angela Dingle, who's a WIP member, gave. It's Give Me Five. The course is 130, and it's called How to Self-Certify for WOSB Federal Contracting Program. And again, we have links here that'll take you there. And she actually walks you through the process in much greater detail than I just did. I gave much more of an overview, but there are the mechanics. I think I'll stop the presentation right now, and we can go through questions.
Great. Well, I have a few questions to start, and I have a question from Joyce Scott. She asks, is WSB on equal level with other programs such as HubZone 8A, et cetera?
Yes. Due to actually required legislation last year, all of the small business programs, set-aside programs, are on an equal level, and it's called parity. And so it's on equal standing. What that means is that a contracting officer should consider all of the set-aside programs equally when determining which one to use as a set-aside. They don't have equal requirements, though. For example, the women-owned program does not have a sole source. There's no ability to sole source, as in some of the other programs. So it's not that all of the programs are structured equally. Parity means that contracting officers can take any one of those programs into account when deciding which program to use to set aside.
Okay. I have another question. Where do we view which projects are available to bid on?
There is a website, fedbizops.gov, so it's fed, F-E-D, biz, B-I-Z, O-P-P-S.gov. And if you click show me only women in the search, show me only WOSB solicitations, you will find those available solicitations. But we're starting something else at WIP in the next couple of weeks, which is it'll also be available on our website. We really want to encourage women to come to that website to see which contracts are being set aside. We really want the contracting officers and the program managers that are using the program to see that we're reaching out to a large group of people, large group of women owners to use the program because we want it to be successful. So it may include an email blast as well when there's a solicitation for WOSB, for the WOSB program.
Okay, I have a question from Alita Wilson. She asks, does fair market value of all owners' assets exclude primary residence?
I think it only excludes retirement.
Okay. I have a question. Does having WOSB or EDWOSB status give us extra points when competing for non-set-aside projects?
I'm not sure I know what extra points means. If you use WOSB, the WOSB program, anybody who uses that program or the agency the agency gets points toward their goal of the 5% women goal. I have to say that in both federal and commercial programs, certifications are a good thing. So if you're certified through this program, I think it will only help to strengthen you. Even if you don't end up with a set-aside through the program, it will only strengthen your credibility as a contractor.
Okay, I have a question from Jill. She asked, once you self-certify, is it still necessary to go through a third-party certifier?
No, it is not. The law says you can do either or.
Okay. I have a question from Nicole Eckhoff. Are there contacts on OSDUBU offices who are specialists in the WSB program?
So OSDUBU, OSDBU, those are small business offices, and every agency has them. And in almost every agency, at least all the major agencies, there is a person dedicated to the women-owned, to outreach to women-owned businesses and understanding this program. So go to the OSDUBU office. You can reach the OSDUBU office, but then you want to make sure you ask for the person who's in charge of the of women-owned business outreach and this program. And they will be very, very helpful to help you kind of navigate their agency with respect to this program.
And I have a question here. Will a WSB receive notification that she has completed the process?
And Ivy, I think it's an important question.
I think that I remember that I asked somebody who went through the process, and I think the answer is that, no, you don't get any kind of big gold star that comes back on your computer saying you've won, you are now officially certified. I think that if you made it through and you hit finish or done or whatever the end of the process is, unless you hear otherwise, you are considered certified because it's a self-certification.
And Kathleen Schneider asks, what does it mean that the contracting officer needs to have a reasonable expectation that two or more WOSBs will submit?
So in order to set aside a contract for this program, or frankly any other program, but for this program, the contracting officer has to have the assurance that at least two women-owned companies could perform the work. Remember that I said this did not have a sole source component to this program. Since things cannot be sole sourced, the contracting officer uses what's called the rule of two, which means that before they can set it aside, they have to have assurance that two women-owned businesses can perform the work. That's often done in the form of an RFI. The agency will put out an RFI, which is a request for information, and it's the request for information is just simply asking for your capability statement with respect to the work that they're looking at. Please respond to those, because that's usually an agency looking to see how they ought to structure the contract, whether it should go to the women-owned program, whether it should be a small business, should it be a hub zone? You know, depending on the responses they get back is how they decide how they're going to set it aside. So it's really important that women-owned businesses that are capable of performing the work, not only they respond, but maybe somebody who might even be a competitor should be encouraged to respond because they need at least two responses.
Okay, Angela J. asks, is it best to certify for both WOSB and EDWSB if you qualify for both?
Yes. You definitely want to register for EDWSB if you meet the criteria.
If anyone has any further questions, you can email them on the public chat function on the side. Kimberly asks, are there opportunities in health and wellness, and where are they found?
So most of the health and wellness programs are in two places that I know of. One is Department of Health and Human Services, and the second is the U.S. Department of Agriculture. USDA runs all the food nutrition programs in the country, and HHS is the department that is responsible for implementing the new health care bill, which has wellness components to it, as well as other, you know, health and wellness programs that existed prior to passage of the health care bill. So those are the two primary agencies that will have that will have opportunities for those two.
Okay, I have a question. It says, when you said there was a 350,000 limit to get the certification, is this 350,000 profit or total revenues?
Let me just go back. The 350,000 is actually your 3-year average adjusted gross yearly income.
Okay.
So adjusted gross. Yeah, adjusted gross means profit.
How can we get large agencies to make the contract sizes smaller or get the SBA to raise the contract value size for WOSBs?
That's a two-part question. I'm just looking for where it is. I don't see it. Is it on the public chat?
Yes, that's on the, public chat on the side.
Okay. So how do we get large agencies to make the contract sizes smaller? That has been a struggle, as everybody on this call probably knows, for many, many years. It's as the acquisition workforce in the agency shrinks, a lot of them are getting to be retirement age. As that shrinks, larger contracts are easier to do. You've often heard, you know, bankers say it's easier to loan $10 million to an entity than a $1,000 loan to a small person, you know, to an individual. The same amount of work basically goes into it. I mean, bankers have often told me that. It's kind of the same way that agencies view it. It's just as easy to put out a huge procurement the same amount of time as opposed to a very small procurement. So that's the struggle that we're always fighting. Last year, the Small Business Jobs Act had something in it which really sought to, for the first time, try to rein in contract bundling. That's, by the way, what putting together big contracts are called. It defined it as $2 million or less, and it requires agencies to justify anything above $2 million that they bundle. And it also had some other language in there which talked about making sure that they had to show that small businesses couldn't do it. So that's one way to attack it. But it is something that we work on day in, day out to try to make sure that those that the agencies contract more to small and less to large. The other one is get the SBA to raise the contract value size for WOSBs. The law had, the law as it was crafted had contract sizes put in it. So what we need to raise it is not for the SBA to raise the contract size limits, but we have to get legislation in the Congress to raise it because it's in the actual statute. And so that's something else that we want to work on. I feel strongly we just need to get this program implemented, and then let's go show that it's a successful program, and then let's go after trying to raise the limit on them.
Okay. Melissa asks, to allow the contract officer to view the data, do we have to assign to each agency, or is there a way to allow all agencies? Also, who determines if a logon user is a contract officer?
So it's a secure environment, so the government only allows contracting officers to access the data. And I don't know exactly what their system is for that, but it is not open to the general government, you know, employees. That is, it's not open. You have to have special, there's special protections in there. And I'm just not entirely sure how they do that or how they restrict it, but I know that they definitely want to restrict it. You don't have to sign agencies. This is an agency-wide certification, but remember that I said that there's somewhere that you, there's a box apparently that you need to check that allows, that gives the permission for all contracting officers to see your information, and that's really important for it to be agency-wide is my understanding, but it is not agency-specific.
Okay. I have a question. And do you know which codes fall under FABS 520 and our financial services in default sector, risk management, regulatory, and advisory?
That's more specific than I'm than I know right off the top of my head. But you can find this if you go to SBA.gov, WOSB. You'll find the list of NAICS codes that are eligible. WIP also has a list, that list, and that's where you'll be able to find whether, you know, whether or not the what the status of these codes are.
Julie B. asks, are there opportunities for staffing services, and if so, where is the best place to find them?
A very large component of federal contracting is staffing services. There are there the FedBiz Ops that I talked about, FedBizOpps.gov is a good place to look. You should also look at the agencies right now are in the process of preparing their forecast for FY12. So the government calendar runs October to October. And so you should take a look at the forecasts that are starting to be posted on agency websites. And frankly, we're not through the year yet of FY11, so there might be some there as well. And that gives you a really good sense of what that agency wants to contract for. Those are two places to start. I think USAspending.gov is another source that you can take a look at to see who is using it. But I can just say that almost every agency does some kind of staffing component. So it's really, it's a big part of government contracting.
Okay, Capstone asks, how long does the company need to be in existence to qualify for it to be a WSB?
Hold on one second. Let me just look. I don't know for certain the answer to that, but I don't think that there is a requirement.
Okay, try and get at
it. On your registering, it would tell you. It would tell you that. It would ask you, "Have you been in business for 2 years?" Oh no. Well, then you couldn't go further. But I don't. I don't think you, there's that requirement.
Trying again. Ask: is there a mentor protege program for WOSBs and large firms?
Not yet, unless your economically disadvantaged women-owned small business is already certified under the 8A program or is contracting with certain agencies that have individually authorized WOSB mentor protege programs. There are some of the departments have these: Defense, Energy, Homeland Security, Veterans Affairs, Treasury, EPA, NASA, GSA, EPA, and USAID. So The answer is there's not a specific one under these programs, but if you are economically disadvantaged, then certified under the 8A program, then you can go in through that portal.
Okay, Nancy asks, are primes for large government projects required to have a certain percentage of WOSB, EDWSB subcontractors?
Every large procurement has to have a subcontracting plan. And that subcontracting plan has to be approved by the contracting officer before it can be awarded. So there's no specific size or specific percentage, but generally speaking, it kind of many times tracks along the goals that are set, like 5% for women. I'm forgetting 5% for HUBZone. I'm kind of forgetting some of the other goals, but the contracting officers have to approve of the subcontracting plan. While we're on that subject, last year we got a terrific part of the law implemented that I didn't think they'd ever put into effect, but it's wonderful. I call it If You List Us, Use Us. Basically, the law now requires that if a prime contractor submits a bid and wins it, they have to use the subcontractors that are listed in their subcontracting plan and the responsibilities that they had assigned them through that. They have to use them unless the small business went out of business or there's some other reason why the small business can't perform the work. I think that's a major victory for small businesses because there was an awful lot of bait and switch. Small businesses helped the large businesses get the contract and then immediately got switched out. And the prime contractor went back to the same old people that they've used all along. That is no longer legal. They can no longer do that under the law.
Well, it looks like we have no further questions here.
Well, these are all really good questions.
Oh, actually, we have one more here from Jill. In CCR, under corporate information, the business type that she checked was A2, woman-owned business. It does not specify WSB. Is this going to change to WSB in the future?
You know, I have to think back to my CCR registration. When I did it, it had a WOSB check. I don't know the answer to that, but what I'd like for Jill to do is send it to you, Scott. Send that question to Scott, and we'll ask SBA that question and get the answer back to her.
Okay. Kathleen asks, what is the best way to use WOSB, EDWSB certification as a marketing tool?
Let me just, by the way, I see there's a question by Nicole that says, whom do we contact for technical difficulties, i.e. size file issues? That's the SBA. There's a number of ways that you can reach the SBA. On the WOSB web, sba.gov/WOSB, website, there's contact information, and that's the that's Michelle Chan at SBA's government procurement government. I'm forgetting the actual division, but it's the government contracting office at SBA. You can go to your district office. You can call your district SBA office, and they will find who can assist you. And then, of course, WIP is always happy to track down that information as well if you're not having any success going through those. A third one, by the way, a fourth place you should feel free to contact is your local Women's Business Center. they should also be able to assist you with getting you information and assistance. And now let me go back to what's the best way to use a certification as a marketing tool. Now that we have a program, the government is expected to meet its 5% women-owned goal, and in fact, this administration has made very clear to the agencies that they expect that they will exceed 5% contracts for women owned, to women-owned businesses. So I think that it's a wonderful marketing tool. It didn't used to be when there was no, or was less of one when there wasn't a program that they could actually set aside contracts through, but now they can. And so marketing as a WOSB, I think, is at this juncture very important and very powerful.
Okay. I have a great question from Angela J. She says, if I have MWBE certification, which is state certification, does this advance the WOSB self-certification process?
I do not believe that it does. I don't believe that DOT and SBA has meshed those certifications. Somebody else raised that with me, and I'm, you know, I don't exactly remember when, but it seemed to me that there should be some way to mesh those. The state certification, the MWBE certification, is in the end a state certification, and so there may be some problems with making that federal, but DOT is a federal agency, and it seems to me that's something that ought to happen.
Okay, well, it looks like we're just about to run out of time, and there's no further questions here, so I just want to first off thank you, Anne, for joining us today, and thank everyone who joined us today and also for your patience during our technical difficulties. I would like to remind you of a couple of, or of an upcoming event. We have American Express's Open Victory in Procurement live event in Miami, Florida on Thursday, June 16th, 2011. Titled Leveraging Your Small Business Certification for Federal Contracts. And you can go to giveme5.com for more information. Today's podcast and presentation of this training will be sent out to all participants on today's call. So if you missed any slides, you will receive those in your email. And then links are going to be posted on the GiveMe5 member archive. Please make sure to look at giveme5.com for a full list of our ongoing training webinars. GiveMe5 is just one of the training programs available through WIP. The Women, Money, and Opportunity series combines resources of the wealth of knowledge within the WIP community to educate women business owners in government contracting, access to capital, technology and telecommunications, and energy and environment. If you would like to join WIP, please contact us by the contact information provided on this slide in the follow-up email. Women Impacting Public Policy is the voice for women in business in our nation's capital, advocating for and on behalf of women and minorities in business in the legislative process of our nation, creating economic opportunities, and building bridges and alliances to other small business organizations. WIP and American Express Open are dedicated to opening federal procurement opportunities for women business owners. Thank you very much, and have a good day.